You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Richard Boxall.
Hello and welcome to the Race to Dubai show as European Tour players return from a short summer break to contest the D&D Real Czech Masters. We'll preview the event at the Albatross Golf Resort, discuss the week's big talking points, and also speak to perhaps the most informed golfer in Europe. I'm Dan Roebuck, and alongside me is Adrian Millerick, social media guru at the European Tour. Adrian, how are you?
Very good, thank you.
Making your debut on the podcast this week. Don't be nervous of Mr. Richard Boxall, who is, of course, the 1990 Lancia Martini Italian Open champion. How much, Mr. Boxall?
Which is now a relics event.
It is. How much do you know, do you remember of that victory? Finishing score under par.
I was 24 under, I think.
No, you weren't. Adrian, do you want to hazard a guess?
22 under par.
21. Winning margin?
5.
Correct. Runner-up?
Jose Maria Olazabal.
Yeah, what happened to him? Others in the top five, can you name them? Third,
Eduardo,
fourth and fifth.
Romero.
Was third?
Craig Stadler was playing, but he wasn't.
No,
up
he
there.
Wasn't, no.
Seve Ballesteros.
Was fifth. Fourth?
Fourth was. I didn't really sort of worry about that. I was
ahead. You don't look in the wing mirror when you're
ahead. No, when you're putting your thumb up like
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
No, I can't remember.
John Bland.
Blandy.
11
right,
under.
Okay. I shot 60.
That's not part of the quiz.
No, it's not part of the. Oh, I didn't know it was a quiz. I thought you were just asking.
No, it's part of the quiz. And for the prize, how much did you win in euros?
I don't know what it was in euros. It's 50 grand.
70,000 euros, it says.
Yeah.
Have you spent that money since?
Funny enough, that's gone with certain other people, yes. Plus, actually, my net check after paying withholding tax and paying the caddy 5 bags of sand was, I think it was 34 grand in the end.
Not bad for a week's work.
You can get that for finishing 45th in a Rolex.
We don't want to move on to that. Adrian, so we mentioned that you are part of the European Tour social media scene. You're a little bit more than that. Give us your official title, so to speak, and maybe what you get up to sort of day by day, week by week for the European Tour.
Yeah, my job title is Senior Content Manager at the European Tour, and basically what that involves is kind of, like it says on the tin really, is ensuring week to week, focusing around the tournament, that our coverage, our social media coverage on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, Facebook, and a little bit of the website is as engaging as possible, really, showing the event off, showing the location off, showing the players off. And that's pretty much the role. It's very broad. You know, we do a lot of different things and it can be quite stressful at times. Enjoy it.
Lots of pictures on European Tour players on their holidays because we haven't had an event for the last couple of weeks. But it was nice to see a bit of jet skiing and a bit of hill walking. Plenty of players enjoying their summers off. Unusual, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, now with social media as well, you do get to see what a lot of the guys are doing sort of behind the scenes. A lot of them sharing stuff now. So, you know, obviously so many different characters on the tour from all over the world. So people going everywhere. Lucas Bjerregaard was with his fiance in Santorini. I've never been there, but
very expensive,
beautiful.
Yeah, I tried to get
you
there.
You actually bought a drink there, did you?
I couldn't afford it. Yeah, I couldn't afford it. I always think the European Tour golf is when we see their sort of Instagram pages, when we see their Twitter feeds, they seem to be a bit more honest. And I suspect that at this level, they are pictures that they post themselves rather than a management team. Is that fair or not? Are you going to tell me that's not
all the
right?
time? There's a big mix and you can tell pretty quickly. I think most fans can tell as well. Certainly we can. And what we try and, you know, when we do know that a manager is basically just running a player's social feeds, we do try to say to the manager, look, obviously you need to tick your boxes, your sponsor boxes, all of that stuff, keep those people happy. But you also have to show some personality and some, because people will soon get bored and think, you know, what am I getting from following this person other than tied 8th at the Czech Masters,
yeah,
really
we
happy,
go again.
Full stop.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you see that sort of stuff quite a lot. And the guys that are best at social media and the guys that obviously have the most followers and interest, you know, guys like Eddie Pepperell, Beef, you know, these are guys who just are normal people and they just document their normal lives, really.
Well, you can listen, I'm older. Okay, I'm 58. So I look at it and I think My goodness. I don't do any of that. I don't do Twitter. I just about write an email, so I don't do Facebook, I don't do Twitter, I don't do any of that. Because I, personally, at my age, I look at it and go, I could get into awful trouble here. You know what I mean? I could get sacked within 4 minutes.
Why do you think
minutes.
That, Boxy?
Because I wouldn't be doing it during the day. I might do it at night after you've had a couple of soft drinks. You know what I mean? And I think you can get, well, people do get into terrible trouble over it, don't they? But, I mean, what are they actually following? What, where they finished in a tournament? Or, I mean, I used to see things of, this is the steak I'm eating tonight. You know, I mean,
I have 58, no interest
in
108.
That. No, 58. No, but I'm just not like, you know, it's just not, I just don't do that. But is that what it's, is that what they do? Like, you know, food and stuff like, how does it work? I am really naive at this sort of stuff, I promise you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Twitter's a little bit more informative, but Instagram's more just like a sort of picture diary of your life, really. And I mean, the guys, they're travelling all around the world, and a lot of them are very young guys.
Yeah.
And they're enjoying their lives. I guess they're playing a sport that they love. So they're kind of, you know, I'm here in South Africa, so why not sort of...
Yeah, no, I wonder how it works. I mean, you've got to be very careful what you put out, haven't you?
Yeah, of course. Obviously. Yeah, I mean, there have been instances where people have gotten a little bit of trouble, but
sure.
I think most of our players are pretty good.
But you can reinvent yourself. I mean, Phil Mickelson, you must look at Phil and think he was a guy that you would never believe would become a bit of a internet Twitter star with some of the stuff that he puts on, because he is nearly boxing in your generation.
Well, he is, yeah. But here's another thing. It is possible, isn't it, with this social media? The way I look at it is...
With this social media?
Yeah, with this social
Sorry,
media
Sorry, Grandad.
Thing. Yeah, no, yeah, well, exactly. We love you. So you could actually speak to Donald Trump if you wanted to, couldn't you?
You could do. You never know. I mean, he might reply. He's a little bit all over the shop on Twitter, so...
Yeah, I mean, my son tells me, who's 11, he said I think it was tweeted, Charlie Adam, who's just been signed to Reading. Mm-hmm. I said, you what? He said, yeah, I spoke to him. And he came back and said, oh, thanks very much. You know, and you can get to people like that now. That's how it works,
and some of the players, you know, a lot of our players, although they're very good professional golfers, a lot of them are really grounded, so they do sometimes chat to fans and... Reply to random tweets. I remember Sergio, British Masters, maybe 2016, and there was this guy tweeting him every single day, asking him if he could caddy for him at the British Masters, which, personally, for me, I mean, that's a little bit too much. Leave the guy alone. You're kind of hassling him a little bit. But then Sergio eventually just said, you know what, come down. So he invited the guy down,
that's
and the
fantastic.
Guy caddied for him just during the pro-am, I think.
Yeah,
but,
no, that's fair.
That was quite interesting to
Is
see.
Is that right, did he?
Yeah.
What do you make of Mickelson's account these days? I mean, it's out there, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good, yeah. Yeah, I think he kind of gets it, that it's not all supposed to be deadly serious and too golfy, and you've got to have a bit of fun with it, and you've got to kind of make fun of yourselves. I think people, you know, warm to people that make fun of themselves. He's certainly not the only one, though, and it's often like there's a lot of them that surprise you, you know, a lot of guys that you talk to, or maybe they come into a press conference, you think, oh, this guy's quite shy, he doesn't really say an awful lot, but then on social media, you know, there's some guys that have got great sense of humour. I mean, Chris Paisley is one, obviously European Tour player, and Chris is a lovely bloke, maybe a little bit on the quieter side, sort of when you see him around. On social media, he's a very funny guy, and, you know, Eddie Pepperell is another one, obviously, he's a very funny guy on social media.
Just the last one on this. How has it changed over the last few years? Because when I first started looking at things like this, you mentioned it was basically, this is my score, this is what I'm hopeful for next, you know, the next round or whatever. And you've got to do more than that. And from European Tour's point of view, you guys are doing something different than maybe you did, you know, two or three years ago.
Yeah, I mean, nowadays it's... I know Boxy just said this social media stuff.
I'm a bit old-fashioned, sorry.
And I mean, that was, I would say, when I first started the tour, you know, social media was very much sort of almost looked at like that. You know, these guys are young and, OK, that's cool what they're doing, but it's not really that important. It's more fluffy stuff on the outside. Whereas nowadays, you know, when people go into meetings with sponsors, and I'm sure when players and their managers go into meetings with sponsors, one of the first thing, if not the first thing, sponsors are going to turn around and say is, how many social media followers have you got? You know, what sort of engagement do you get on your posts and stuff like that? I mean, you know, whether you follow it, whether it's your thing or not, it's a pretty big part of the world nowadays, and I think it's not going to change.
And is that a Twitter? That's a Twitter account, is it?
Twitter, Instagram, main two,
right.
really.
What would you, if I was to go on it, what would you say?
Oh, my, we're going to get Boxy on Twitter. This is fantastic.
Well, no,
come
no,
on,
no, no, I could get into terrible trouble. But no. What would you suggest? I've heard of Instagram. That's pictures and stuff, isn't it?
You're quite photogenic, though. I reckon Instagram's
quite
probably
pretty.
Better.
Too pretty to be a man, really. No, you'd put me on what, Instagram?
I'd put you on Instagram, yeah.
Yeah, and which is pictures.
Yeah, it doesn't have to just be, yeah, I mean, pictures, videos, more visual.
bit of video.
Ooh, bit of video could be a bit dangerous. Right, okay,
I think
you wouldn't do
happen.
Twitter. No, I've no idea. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it depends what you're after. If you're after sort of, I would say more...
Golf info, let's say.
If you're after more golf info, like then Twitter's your place. Instagram's...
We want what you're up to. When are you on duty next? You're in Sweden, aren't you, next
week? I'm
going
to Sweden next Tuesday.
That'd be fantastic.
Here I am at the airport.
There you go.
Here I am. Again.
You are not in the Czech Republic this week.
No.
The European tour is. We're going to preview the D&D Real Czech Masters. We're at the Albatross course, which opened in 2009, designed by Keith Preston, it says here. I've got my notes here, Boxy.
You have, yeah. You've
it
done
says
very well.
It occupies, and Adrian's going to tell us a lot more because he's been there, occupies a moderately hilly 200-acre site close to the Český Kras Nature Reserve on the outskirts of Prague. Mighty challenge, it says here. 7,358 yards from the championship tees. Two returning nines, each of which conclude with water-laden holes close to the clubhouse.
Laden holes or laden holes?
Laden holes. Oh, okay. Laden holes. Have you been to this club,
I have,
Boxy?
Yeah, I've been there.
What is it like?
Well, I went there when Donaldson won, Peters won.
Yeah.
Peterson won.
Type of player does well.
Pavan won. I'm sure I was there last year. What type of player does well? Somebody like Donaldson or Peters or Peterson or Hayden Portier, somebody like that. Somebody that can knock it round in one less than everybody else, really, funnily enough. That seems to be how it works every week. It's a fiddly course. You've got to shape the ball, you know. And when we first went there, not as a player, but when we went there as a commentator, it was quite bland, and they have changed it around, and they've changed around the par three, they've changed the 16th, they've changed the 18th, they've brought water in, they shaped the greens a bit more, and it's a pretty good-looking course now.
Adrian, you've been there, I think, for the last few years. Do the players enjoy it? Do you get the sense that they enjoy going to Prague and they enjoy the track?
Definitely, yeah. I think it's one of those events where you get that feeling when you're there. The players are all in very good moods. I mean, if anyone's ever been to Prague, you'd know why. It's an amazing city. Food's great. It's just a fantastic place, and certainly from our point of view, when you're at those events and you're working with players, you do notice from week to week, some weeks guys are very positive and upbeat. You know, Switzerland, when you're up in the mountains, for example, comes to mind, and this is one of those where you see the players quite a lot in the evenings when you go out for dinner and stuff like that. You see them around enjoying themselves, very sort of relaxed vibe. And I really like the event as well. I think it's a nice event. I think it's a nice golf course.
Let's talk about some of the players, shall we? Lee Westwood, who was fourth in the Open Championship. And at one stage, I thought he might be able to win it. He would have been the oldest major winner since Nicklaus, or maybe even older, I think, potentially. You always sense he's got more wins in him. He won in South Africa, didn't he, calendar year. What sort of chances this week do you think for Westy?
I think Lee Westwood... as I do every single week when he plays in Europe especially, he's got a fantastic chance of winning. He's incredibly consistent, been around a long time now. What has he had? 24 wins, I think it is, on the European Tour. Is it 24? Adrian, get on that computer, have a quick look. I think it's 24, over 40 worldwide. And, you know, is, as you said, I think you said earlier, Dan, you know, unlucky never to have won a major, really. But I think he's got a chance every single week. Every time he plays in Europe, I think he's one of the top five favourites, I would say.
You were right, 24 European Tour
24
wins.
24 wins. Yeah. Thank you very much.
And a ridiculous amount of top tens as well.
Yes, he's had loads, hasn't he?
He seems to be enjoying himself on the course a lot more, though, at the moment, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely. Seems really laid back, and I think, obviously, having Helen, his partner, like, really helps with that. We spoke to him about that, and he basically said that, you know, he's been around so long, he knows what he's doing, he doesn't really need to have, you know, a tour caddy that's been around for 20 years on his back.
No, that sort of puts the caddies down a bit, if you know what I mean. You know, it's like somebody, I remember once, I think it was Steve Bennett or Mark James, whoever it was, played in Tunisia and pulled a trolley round. And he said, there you go. And they won, you know what I mean?
Won,
he goes, there you go. But, I mean, you're not married, are you?
I am married, yeah.
Are you? Mm-hmm. Can you imagine your wife caddying for you as a...
She really, really doesn't like golf. So the chance of her cracked being it. On a golf course for 5 hours, very minimal.
How about your other half?
What does she like golf?
No, would she, you imagine her Kelly if you're a pro? Would you? How would that go?
She once got shouted at by Craig Connolly at the Madrid Masters.
Did she?
Yeah.
For what?
Because she was taking photographs and he didn't like it when he was Martin Keimer's caddy. And he went, hey, you! Did he? Back counter down!
What, was he, he's Welsh.
I thought that was quite good.
That wasn't bad, actually.
Yeah.
That wasn't
and, bad. Yeah, so that sort of put her off Craig Connolly for a time, yeah.
So, but you didn't answer my question, would you have a caddy for you?
Yeah,
can you imagine?
Not? Yeah,
how
of
would
course,
that go?
Yeah, it'd be great. We'd have a great week. I'd really enjoy it.
No, a full season.
A full season? Yeah, not why not? We'd have a great season.
Not a fun week. It's a full season.
We might miss a few cuts. But we're just... Back to Lee Westwood. Do you think he's mellowed a little bit?
Yeah, massively. I think as well... That you mentioned the win at the Nedbank Golf Challenge November. I was actually at that event and I honestly think he really doubted whether he'd ever win again. And I think after that, he just
played
fought.
Brilliantly that on that Sunday, didn't he? As
he did.
Gus, who led going into the final round.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't like he won a small event. No, you know, he won a big event with some... Yeah, exactly. He went out and won it himself. And I think he surprised himself maybe a little bit. And then, you know, afterwards seeing... Because, I mean, Lee is... You know, he's quite a sort of stern-looking Englishman. To see him, you know, really emotional after the win, that was great. And fans love seeing that, seeing, you know, the other side to Lee Westwood. But I think after that, I think he's just thought he's won again. He's achieved so much in the game, you know. Why not just enjoy it?
Yeah, I think he does enjoy it. I think he's very mellow now. I think that's obviously something to do with age as well. Was he 46? Anyway, go on. You want to fire a question at me?
No, I was just going to say, we've got, I don't want to say old stages, because Lee Westwood is still playing very, very well.
Yeah, he is.
Ernie Els, Padraig Harrington are both teeing up as well in the Czech Republic. We've seen Ernie on the odd leaderboard sort of early on in the week. I'm not quite sure if Ernie's going to be winning again on the European Tour. What are your thoughts on the South African this week, Adrian?
Yeah, I think, like you said, it's whether he can put together four low rounds and maintain it. I'm not sure. I'm handing this one over to Boxy.
Okay, that's fair enough. No, I think what Ernie's doing, number one, he doesn't need to prove anything. I think he's just playing and practicing, keeping, nudging along
for
the
gets
to 50, yeah. Which was just around the corner now. So he's just keeping his competitive juices
what about,
going.
What about Harrington then? Because he has gone close to wins over the last year.
He very nearly won this last year.
Mm. Four rounds in the 60s.
Pavan was all the way around. I remember the final round. I thought Harrington's going to do this. He's going to do this, and then just dropped off a little bit towards the end. And Pavan played really well, and picked up his. Well, that would have been his first when he had another win, didn't he?
He won this year, didn't he? Yeah.
Where did he win? Quick! Pavan won. Was it BMW Munich?
No. Wasn't it out in the Far East somewhere?
I should know this straight away. The fact that I'm going to get so much abuse for this.
Hang on, we got producers and everybody working.
It was Munich.
Richard Boxall, you are right.
Yeah.
I think, though, that was more Pavan, again, winning that rather than Harrington losing that.
Yeah, I think definitely. But, you know, it looked like one of those. But Harrington, you know, he's been around also forever and ever and ever. His dedication is unbelievable. You know, I remember when range balls were out, where they are now, but, I mean, you know, there used to be a time we used to hit our own golf balls, Adrian, OK, on the driving range. And I remember in Italy, in Ireland once, he sent Dave McNeely down the practice ground. When other lads are hitting range balls, he sent somebody, he's Dave McNeely down there, and he was hitting a wedge and a gap wedge and wanted to know the difference in yardages. But he thought he could only do them with his own golf balls, you know, rather than the range balls. I mean, his dedication is amazing. And Harrington's the type of player, you know, three-time major winner who, now as he's getting older, could quite easily, for 2.5-3 rounds, be right up there, but doesn't always go the full distance now. And understandably so, you know, you get older, the wheel turns, people have to fall off it and other people have to get on it.
I think he was, you know, after Ireland, after he was leading first round in Ireland, I think that was a different sort of situation to this event. There was so much pressure on him in Ireland. I think this is the sort of event, if he's leading after 2-3 rounds, it's quite a laid back event. I could easily see Harrington winning again on the European Tour. And, you know, I love Padraig Harrington. I think, like a lot of European Tour staff, he's a fantastic guy.
Yeah,
he's great fun. I remember last year, I don't know if you guys recall seeing the footage when there was a probably one of our best performing videos of the whole week when he was trying to go to the toilet on the course. I don't know if
yes,
you recall
yes,
this.
We did, yeah.
And the cameraman was following him, and he stopped and looked at the cameraman and just gave him the look as if to say,
give him the
yeah,
toilet look.
Yeah, you know, what are you doing?
That was this event, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was this event, yeah. And the cameraman then sort of didn't know what to do. I don't know what was going on. They maybe had something in their ears saying, you know, okay, pan away, pan away. He then moved away for a little bit. Harrington thought the coast was clear, went to move behind the bushes again, and the cameraman panned back round. And then
that's right.
Harrington sort of shooed him away. He gave him the arm in the end to get away.
The wave.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Pan being the operative word there when you said it, pan.
We've talked about one or two of the older players who are playing this week. Thomas Peters and Victor Dubuisson. Are they both on the comeback trail? I mean, Thomas Peters hasn't fallen as much as Dubuisson did, but having and we've talked about Thomas an awful lot because we all recognise what a really good player he is. But yeah, he hasn't kicked on after Ryder Cup, has he? He just hasn't.
Is it four years since he won? We're going to have to check that because I think it is, which is amazing. Thomas Peters has won.
Because after that, you think he's just going to keep on winning and winning.
Year in, year out. We will find out how many.
And we keep coming back to him.
Victor Dubuisson is just a different character to everyone else, isn't he?
He's an extraordinary character.
Yeah,
I think, you know, if from 5 years being on tour, obviously you've been around longer than me, but from my 5 years on the tour, if someone was to say, you know, who's the most bizarre character on tour, I mean, I'd go to Victor straight away. I remember, I think when I was there 2016 and Victor was playing, I think first, second round, and he was in, you know, the marquee group with some of the big names.
At the Czech Masters,
yeah. And, you know, the clock was ticking down and people were saying, where's Victor? And then he just sort of slowly appeared from the clubhouse, strolled onto the putting green, got six balls out of his sleeve of balls, like you would see at your golf club round the corner, popped them all down, missed, probably only made two of six putts from 6 foot, picked them back up, put them back in his bag, got his phone out, texted a couple of people, and then just went straight to the first tee,
knocked it around a 67.
Is that the sort of thing that, obviously not with the phone, but, you know, 30 years ago might happen in your day, just not putting that sort of effort?
Oh, yeah, no, listen, I'll tell you a little story here. I was teeing off in the, I think it was the third round of the Dutch Open, which I think was the KLM, I think it was in those days. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But I was drawn with Monty, OK, and we were at Hilversum Golf Club. And we had to get in a 12-seater van every morning to go to the trotting track, which was out of the golf club, down the road, turn left, trotting track with a big field in the middle where you could hit golf balls. And that's where we went every day. And I'm standing on the putting green, and Monty, and we're like last off in the third round or last round, I can't remember. Anyway, Monty says to me, where's the driving range? So I said, what? He said, where? I said, don't be stupid. He said, you know where it is. He said, no, where's the range? I said, well, you know, Monty. I said, we get in the cars and we go down the track. Not a clue. He said, not been there all week. I said, well, where have you practiced? He said, I haven't. So I said, how do you get it down this first hole here? I said, it's as tight as, well, I won't swear, but it's very tight, you know, left and right. I said, how do you get it down the fairway? He said, well, I just tee it up low on the right-hand side, give it a little necky cut, knock it down the left-hand side, and it cuts back into the fairway. I couldn't believe it. I stood straight on the tee when I was with him. I put it straight in the silver birches on the right. He just went cut down the middle on the green. I can't remember how we got to that point of talking about Monty. What was it?
We were talking about players who, you know, didn't necessarily practice all the time.
Yeah. No, I think that's...
But has Victor suffered because of that? If he dedicated himself a little bit more, would he be a better player? Or is that his character and that's how he's going to win? If he's going to come back and win events, he's got to do it in the way that he's done it before.
Well, go on. Well, I was going to say, you know, Nick Fowler thought that everybody should hit loads and loads and loads and loads of golf balls and work and work and work. But that's his character. Everyone's different. That's what makes the world go round. You know, if I'd have been at the time, personally, if it had been the time of the gym and whacking loads of golf balls and room service and going to bed at 8:30. I'd have lasted 10 minutes on the European.
You might have been a bad player.
I don't think I would have been. I lasted 17 years, but I don't think... Only because the gym, the thought of going to the gym. I mean, it's a man's name, for crying out loud. You know, I mean, when I broke my leg in the Open in 1991, I had to spend a year in a gym. and I never, ever, ever want to see a static bike or a rowing machine ever again in my life. That's how I got into this beautiful figure.
Do you think that was one of the reasons?
That what?
That you don't like the gym because of your time in rehabilitation?
There's no question. That's one of them, yeah.
So if that hadn't happened?
If that hadn't have happened, number one, I'd have won the Open and I'd have been a multimillionaire. I wouldn't be sitting here doing this for a cup of tea and a biscuit, would I?
What about Victor's chances then, sort of his sort of immediate future, do you think? Is he getting back towards something like we saw a few years ago?
He's just so hard to predict with Victor. I know he has rededicated himself to the game a little bit. And, you know, he has spoken about this in European Tour player blogs and other things like that. But he's one guy, you just can't predict what he's going to do next. You know, he could turn it on and he could be top five without even trying, or he could be miscut and he could be on the plane home to South of France. But on Peters as well, I know Boxy loves a stat, so got a stat here for you. Best aggregate scores to par of the players in the field for the Czech Masters this week. At the top is Thomas Peters, 36 under par from 324 holes played. Second, Eddie Pepperell, 31 under par. And third, Lee Slattery. Lee Slattery and nice. Tom Lewis, 29 under par. So I know
last win for Thomas Peters was in 2016 at the Made in Denmark. He did win this the previous year, but he has won the World Cup of Golf with Thomas De Tree. Was that back end of last year or start of this year? I can't remember now.
Back end of
last year, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. It was about December, wasn't it? Just before you bought all your Christmas presents.
Yes, it was. Other players to note here. I mean, we've got one or two that we can talk about. Alex Levy talking about French players. Another player that I thought might have been destined for a little bit better because he won some big money events. And then I know that do players sort of plateau out a little bit quicker these days? They don't want to kick on. Or is it just because the standard's so high, it is difficult to keep on winning because there are so many good young players coming through and so on?
I just think he's having a bad year. Simple as that.
I sometimes wonder as well, you know, when guys come out like Alex Levy and he's such a sort of natural player, he gets up there, hits it, goes and gets it, hits it again. Yeah. I do wonder sometimes when they've won a couple of times, things start getting complicated. They get a lot of people around them, a lot of different coaches, a lot of different advice, and sometimes they get away from sort of what it was that helped them win when they first came out.
I think he's won five times, Alex.
He has won five times, correct.
Now, you know, so he's too good a player to say, oh, he's not up there anymore. I think Adrian's probably right there. You start listening to a lot of people, start confusing your head. You know, you hit one or two bad shots and all of a sudden you want to know where that's come from. Where when you're playing well and you hit one or two bad shots, you don't give a damn about it. You just carry on. Here's the thing. So there's only one player that's gone around and changed his swing, in my mind, completely dismantled it and done well, and that's Nick Faldo. Mm. Nobody else really has.
Others have tried and failed.
They've tried and failed miserably. And you know, Alexander Levy wins five times in the European Tour. I'm not saying he is being taught by somebody else. I have no idea. I'm just taking a wild guess at this. But why not stick to what you're good at? Stick with, you know, you've had your five wins. You're turning over £1 million a year on the European Tour. Stick to it.
A couple of others to mention. Aaron Rye, who suddenly sprung to prominence again with his performance at the WGC.
Yeah.
12th place.
I was out there and I find Aaron Rye a very interesting guy. You know, he keeps himself to himself and on the range in Memphis for the WGC FedEx. You had all the guys there on the main range, and obviously you've got your big hitters, your big names. You've got Rory, you've got Brooks, you've got Dustin Johnson, and it is interesting to see how those, you know, the guys that all of a sudden appear on the European Tour, how they adapt to going to those.
Must be really intimidating for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're in the States, and all of a sudden these guys, you know, you've seen on Sunday night on TV, and you're there next to them on the range. Aaron Rye was about 150 yards. To the right of the range, basically where the chipping area was, and he'd sort of turned that into his makeshift driving range and was hitting out towards, you know, the 200-yard marker, but from the chipping area. And, I mean, I'm not saying he was intimidated or anything like that.
That's just the way he goes about his business.
That's just the way he is week to week, you know. I mean, I don't know if he has got a full-time caddy yet, but I know he was always new caddy each week. And, you know, good on him. That's the way he does it. That's the way he wants to do it. And it's been successful, so...
No, we had him on the Race to Dubai show when he won in, I want to say, Hong Kong.
Hong Kong, yeah.
And I mean, you know, he does go about it a different way.
He wears two gloves.
He always has that sort of underlayer on as well. I noticed that in Memphis. I mean, you know, very, very hot over there, and he's got the layer on underneath the t-shirt, and I thought,
what you mean? What that? Not that cooling layer, whatever it's called.
Yeah, I mean, does that cool you?
You wouldn't have thought
38 Celsius.
I don't know. He's a nice lad, though.
Any other players that we should mention? I've got a big list here. Obviously, we're going to get some selections pretty soon. Jamie Donaldson, who we've seen do some TV work, but again, when he's played recently, he's put in one or two decent performances,
yeah,
hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. He's played all right.
Hayden Porteous as well. One that we can mention, maybe, Adrian.
Yeah, I mean, Hayden, bit of history, obviously, having won the event, seems to really like the golf course. I don't know if they're engaged. I think they might be engaged, him and his...
Does he know that he's engaged? he is now.
I think he might be. She's from the Czech Republic, so he's, you know, it's kind of like, I guess you could say, his second home event, because he spends quite a lot of time over there.
He's not going to do a Rory Sabatini on us, is he?
I shouldn't think so. No,
I don't get into the Olympics and the Ryder Cup.
Yes.
I don't know how good his Czech is.
Hang on, he came out with a word. Where did you say this?
Prosím.
Prosím. What does that mean?
Please, I think.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Well, you'll go far in Prague.
Pivo?
Really?
I think that's beer.
Is it? Should know that one.
So, Pivo, prosím. You're halfway there, Boxy.
Then you've got to pay for it. But it's quite cheap in Prague. Sorry, mate, we stopped halfway through your flow there.
Yeah, no, I was just saying Hayden, I think, is one of the courses he obviously likes, and he seems to like being back in the Czech Republic, so he's definitely one to consider. Other people, Bernd Wiesberger.
Yeah, we like Bernd. Friend of the show.
Second in the Race to Dubai rankings at the moment. Seems in a really good place again after getting over that injury. He seems confident again. He's obviously playing very, very well. Tied second in Ireland, first in Scotland. You know, he's one of the players that's been on holiday recently. We've seen all of the Instagram posts of him just chilling out, relaxing. I think sometimes that helps guys when they just get away from it, then they come back. Lee Slattery as well. I had written down when, I think it was last year, 7 under par 65 in torrential conditions, and a lot of the guys were coming off and couldn't believe that he managed to shoot 65, saying that was one of the best rounds of the entire European Tour season. And Eddie Pepperell was the final one I was going to mention.
Yeah, we've not mentioned Eddie, have we?
Four top tens in the event, 3 top 5s. And, you know, where better to warm up for the Czech Masters than in Ibiza meeting Craig David?
Absolutely.
Perfect prep.
Do you know who Craig David is, Boxy?
Craig David is a singer.
Excellent.
Because he sings, he used to sing the songs at the Medeski
Stadium. The whole
world
sings?
No, at the Medeski Stadium. Was it David Craig? Yeah, it was.
David Craig?
Yeah.
I think that's his brother.
Who's Craig David?
No, I asked you who Craig David was.
Craig David is a singer.
Correct.
Yeah, he used to sing. His music used to go out.
Excellent.
At the Medeski Stadium. I'm sure it was him anyway.
Tempted to sing a little line from one of his songs there, but you can't do that on your debut.
Yes, you can. Of course you can.
No matter, or something like that. What is it?
Well, hang on, Poxy, what was
Took
that?
Took her for a drink on Monday.
Yes, I know.
I've humiliated myself.
Yeah. What was his...
Excellent.
It's really good. What was one of his first...
I didn't understand any of it. It was excellent.
It was
Craig David. I'm not a massive fan myself, but I know Eddie Pepperell loves him.
I just know the bow selector Craig David that apparently ruined his career.
Do you like
career.
ABBA?
ABBA?
Yeah, you heard of ABBA?
I've heard of ABBA.
My wife's Swedish, so I know.
There you go. Nailed down.
Love it. Brass Lark, Taxamilly.
Yeah.
We've got one of our sound producers in there.
What's your favourite ABBA song, Boxy?
Money, Money, Money.
Why does that not surprise me at all? Oh, dear. Let's get some selections, shall we, on this fine Monday regarding the Czech Masters. Adrian, we need 2 picks, a reminder of the format. We do this every week. This is August, just in case our legion of fans don't know.
Go on.
2 picks.
Go on.
One has to be outside of the top 50 in the final 2018 Race to Dubai standings. It's 20 points for a winner, 10 for a top 5, 5 for a top 20, a minus 5 for a miscut. Presenters, 160, that's me, and occasionally Mr. Lee. Co-presenters, 90, that's Mr. Boxall, and Adrian, you are the guest this week. You're on 80. So predictions, Adrian, let's get 2 names and your reasons why.
Yeah, you won't be surprised to know Eddie Pepperell, having just said, I said four top tens, three top fives, coming in off a little bit of holiday. Seems to really like the golf course, quite sort of decent tee to green. And the other one, I feel like I'm sort of maybe cheating a little bit with the outside the top 50, but four rounds in the 60s last year. Seems super comfortable on the golf course. Podrick Harrington is my sort of
why
wild.
Do you think you're cheating with your pick?
Yeah, I sort of feel those you should go more sort of left field and pluck someone out there and then back it up with about 50 stats.
I see. Boxy.
Yes.
Who are you going for?
Oh, okay. I'm going for Tom Lewis, and you came up with a very good stat in there, which was earlier on about Tom Lewis around this golf course, aggregate to par or something.
Yeah, he was right on there. Yeah, he's 29 under par. Yeah, third.
So he likes his course. And the other one I'm going for is Paul Waring. He got his first win last year. He's a nice lad, and I just think he'll do well.
He's done bits and pieces with you guys, hasn't he, Paul Waring?
He's great, yeah. He's a fantastic guy, super nice. And he's one of those guys who really enjoys, you know, he said to us before, guys, look, if you want to do Facebook Live, if you want to do this and that, I'm always around. And a lot of the guys are like that, but Paul's certainly a really good guy. And his nephew works for the tour now, so you've got to be careful what you say around him.
I've tipped up Paul on this
show.
Don't
start now.
I've tipped him up previously. He is a Liverpool fan, isn't he, Mr. Waring?
He is,
massive, yeah. I remember seeing him the day after they won the Champions League, and he couldn't. The voice was very croaky. It had gone.
I am going to go for...
Oh, yeah, we've got to ask him, haven't we? We can't let him introduce himself. And finally, Dan, who are you going for?
I'm going to go for Andrea Pavan. I like Pavan.
Defending mushroom.
Defending champion. And do you know one of the reasons why I like Andrea Pavan? Because in the strokes gained metric, Boxy, I've not checked this recently, but he was one that always ranked one of the highest in strokes gained tee to green, which I think, and Adrian might back me up on this, is the key strokes gained stat when it comes to a barometer of whether golfers are playing well. Do you go along with that? Do you like the tee to green stat more than strokes gained putting, more than around the green or off the tee? I like tee to green to me. Well, if your numbers are good in that, that is proof positive you're playing well.
Doesn't it just show you're hitting more fairways? The idea is to go as low as you can possibly get. I just don't get it.
My second selection is Gavin Green, who was just outside of the top 50 Race 2 Dubai standings last year, so he might be a standing dish over the next few weeks on this show. Missed the cut in the Scottish Open. Prior to that, though, top 10s in the Irish Open and the Andalusia Masters, and in the Czech Masters last year, opened up with a 64 and was tied third. Good player, isn't he?
Green? He hits it long massive as well.
Does. First Malaysian to win the Asian Order of Merit, you know, in 2017. He's quite young as well.
He is, yeah. He seems like a really good guy. Yeah, and he won the, you know, obviously going to the Czech Republic, going to Prague, they do like their beer. Yes. He won the, I think maybe a year's supply of beer for the longest drive, I think.
What a prize that is.
On one hole. And then, you know, we sort of said afterwards, does he drink alcohol? You know, we didn't know him very well. Yeah. So we checked with his manager. Gavin, he has a drink. Yeah, that's fine. And he gave a really nice interview after winning the booze. And basically we said, Gavin, are you going to drink that? And he was like, yes, I am.
I'm always curious. When these year supply prizes are offered, what constitutes a year supply for someone might not be a year supply for someone else.
Well, yes.
How much is a year's supply?
Well, listen. We once had a prize in Italy, which was you win your weight in ham. And in those days, it would have been the whole pig farm that I'd have been taking home. I can assure you, I used to be a stone and a half heavier. I know I'm quite attractive now, Adrian, and you know I've changed quite a lot. But beer.
What's a year's supply?
I reckon you drink six of those bottles.
I reckon you get 365 bottles.
Do you?
Yeah. Which, obviously, I'd take the prize, but I'd be a little bit disappointed at the same time.
You'd think...
Because I would guarantee you that would not last a year.
Not with my friends, it wouldn't, I can assure you. That wouldn't do a barbecue for an evening.
A year's supply, Boxy, is not the same as all you can drink.
No, that also is very true.
And how does it get delivered as well? That's what I've always wondered. Yeah. You know, does it all sort of come in one ridiculously big lorry and they unload it and then
how
does that happen?
Or do you go, maybe you're given vouchers and you can go down and say, we can go here and get that and go there and get this.
Maybe, yeah. But
I don't like that. I want it all delivered at the same time.
I want it piled in the garage. Yeah.
Do you remember that Channel 5 show that used to have, like, a prize, like it was the gadget show or something, and you had, like, loads of prizes and you won, like, a PlayStation 8 55-inch TV screen, absolutely everything, electric guitar, everything. There's about 100 different prizes. I always wondered, if you get that delivered and you live, like, in a studio flat...
What's that,
what do you do with it?
It's like the generation game. How am I going to get all that home?
What do you do with it all, you know? I don't know. I mean, I'd take it, obviously, but some might be left on the street and it wouldn't be left for long. Well, it might be near me.
Yeah.
Maybe not near you two. Anyway, Fantasy Race 2 Dubai game. You can still get involved in this. Go to the European Tour section. Oh, the My European Tour section of europeantour.com. Lee Findlay still leads the global leaderboard. You must play this, Adrian, I guess. Oh, no, hang on, Adrian. He works for the European Tour, does not play.
I think it's because I'm too close to the tour.
Yeah,
I didn't want to, you know, I don't want to do somebody out of victory because if I played, I would be right up there.
Employees and family of the European Tour are not allowed to play. Now then. Mr. Boxall, we need the top 10 in the race to Dubai as the European Tour resumes this week.
OK, in 10th spot is Jorge Campillo. Matthew Fitzpatrick is 9th. Xander Schauffele is 8th. 7th is Louis Oosthuizen. 6th is Kevin Kistner. Matt Wallace is now 5th. 4th is Tommy Fleetwood. John Rahm is 3rd. 2nd is Bernd Wiesberger. And it's the Open champion, Shane Lowry, who leads the way.
Elsewhere, European Tour member Patrick Reed won the Northern Trust event on the PGA Tour. The 2018 Masters champion held off the challenge of Mexico's Abraham Ansa to win by a shot. Spain's Jon Rahm came joint third. Rory McIlroy finished 4 shots behind Patrick Reed.
My daughter, little Windsor Wells, every time I leave, because she's old enough now, she's like, Daddy, you're going golf course? I'm like, yeah, Daddy's got to go away. Daddy's going golf course. And, you know, it breaks my heart, obviously, because she's like, all right, you know, Daddy's leaving again. So I keep on telling her, I was like, don't worry, Daddy's going to bring you home a trophy. I've let her down now for, what, 14, 15 months? So finally, you know, Daddy gets to bring home a trophy for the little one. And Barrett, first tournament I won with him was the Masters, and now all of a sudden a playoff event. So he's off to a pretty good start. You know, I just can't wait to get home and to, you know, to share this win with them and, you know, kind of reflect on it and let, you know, and hang out with the little ones. But you know, at the end of the day, you know, it's recover tomorrow and get back to the grind and get ready for playoffs because, you know, it was just the first week. We have 2 more weeks coming in.
Plenty of talking points from Patrick Reed's win, first playoff event on the PGA Tour. First of all, I don't think he played absolutely brilliantly on the final day. Jon Rahm seemed to have it in his grasp, but he did enough, and clutch putts down the stretch meant that he was back in the winner's enclosure again. I mean, he's a very good player. He's not had a great year, but I thought he did enough to win, obviously, last night. Jon Rahm's got to be massively disappointed, I think.
Yeah, I mean, clutch is what Patrick Reed is. When he's in contention and if he's got a sniff, then, you know, he's such a fighter. He's a proper battler. And, you know, like him or not, I personally quite like him. You know, if he's in contention there on the final day, he's hard to bet against. And he's great around the green, great around the greens. Great around the greens, getting up and down. Yeah, great win.
Now, the last time that I discussed Patrick Reed with Richard Boxall Esquire was ahead of the Open Championship when I suggested he was a very, very good each-way bet, and yourself and our guest of the day... Michael McKeown scoffed at me. And then, during the event, I think it was the first or the second round, as Patrick Reed was motoring through the gears, getting a little bit closer towards the top of the leaderboard, Mr. Richard Boxall remarked on Sky Sports and gave me a shout-out suggesting that I was a very nice chap. My phone absolutely lit up. Boxy's just given you a...
Did it really?
A shout. Richard Boxall just said you're a nice chap. And I thought to myself, Dan, you've just been named on Sky. You're on Sky, Dan. You're on Sky. And I thought, does nobody watch Major League Soccer at the weekend? Because I'm on every single night. Well, but he did play well, didn't he, Mr. Reed?
He did well. And not only, Adrian, did he say that he would do well in the Open Championship, he said he'll win a tournament in the next few weeks.
A winner waiting to happen.
And we scoffed, and here he is, the winner of the Northern Trust last night. So.
Did you watch your boxing? I mean,
I watched it up until about the 9th, then I was. I knew I had to do this.
Rahm was, what, 2 clear at the turn?
Not a chopping and change. Yeah. He was at least one clear after 8.
We saw Jon Rahm in Ireland. If you want someone playing well, you know, I was very surprised he lost that one. Do we class Reed as one of our own? Not really.
We do. Strictly speaking, at the European Tour, we do. He's been good to us. He's shown a lot of willingness to come and play European Tour events where maybe some of the other American stars haven't so much. And when he is at European Tour events, you know, he's contrary to what the reputation he seems to have, he's always been fine. He's been fine with us guys. He's got his own way of doing things. You're not going to get anything out of him pre-round. The headphones are in. And I heard he listened to the same song over and over again.
Do we know what the song is?
Well, I think he might have changed it recently. I hope I'm not talking complete nonsense. One of my colleagues told me, I think we were at the DP World last year, and I said, I wonder what he's listening to. And he said, I think he's listening to Imagine Dragons.
Oh, I wouldn't know who that is.
Good tune. I'm not singing anything else.
He's a good crowd puller.
We're going to be seeing him a bit more. And he is a crowd puller.
He is.
A few other points of order coming out of the event on the PGA Tour. I want to talk about Rory McIlroy first, because we mentioned that he was four shots behind Patrick Reed. Two-shot penalty that was rescinded after it was determined that he'd not intended to improve his lie in a bunker. This was on the par 3, 14. When he touched what he thought was a stone, turned out to be sand, and was given the two-shot penalty straight away, and then after the round was completed, it was rescinded. I mean, it's a business.
I think he was very fortunate there, McIlroy, to be honest. I mean, you know, he's never, ever going to try and improve his lie, ever. But he's gone down. He thought it was a stone. He went to move it, and it wasn't a stone. Rules are rules, I'm afraid. What about if somebody else on the other side of the course has done that?
What, not on camera?
Yeah, no TV.
Rory called the rules official.
He's not trying
over.
To gain anything. I mean, he went down, he thought it was a stone, and then realised it was a bit of sand, so then you call the rules official across. The only thing you could do slightly different is you go, which a player would never really do, he would look at his ball and then call the rules official and say, can I touch this here?
Yeah, and that generally doesn't happen.
And the rules official is going to go down and he's going to think it's a stone, and he's going to go, yeah, you can, and then you touch it, and then you realise it's sand.
I mean, he didn't make a big fuss of it because he was conscious of playing behind him and so on.
I think he knew he was going to get a penalty. That's why I say a two-shot penalty. That's why I would say Rory would think himself incredibly fortunate.
Yeah, I mean, what's your mindset like, though? And then, you know, you're playing almost a different game, aren't you, then? Because you're up in the vanguard, you're towards the top of the leaderboard, you've got this two-shot penalty. He birdies the next, has birdie opportunities, I think, on 17 and 18 as well, that he doesn't take. But the fact that you're a little bit behind the eight ball because of what's happened and then it goes back again, I mean, it's confusing, isn't it?
It is, yeah. I don't know, maybe it helps him, you know, firing back. Next holes, you get angry. I mean, anyone who's played golf, I mean, I'm a 15 handicapper, I'm very average. When you get angry, sometimes you fight back next few holes.
Listen, it's one of those things. He's made a mistake. That's why he called the rules official over. He's being incredibly honest about the whole thing. If you touch something in the bunker, you touch the sand, and he's not trying to improve his life. You touch the sand, you've touched the sand, and that two shots. Simple as that.
Bryson DeChambeau, slow play, discuss. 2 minutes to hit a 70-yard chip, similar time for an 8-foot putt. A lot of people not happy about this.
Yeah.
Again.
I think the putt was, we were all watching it, actually. We were at one of our colleagues' wedding in Scotland, so there was a lot of my European Tour colleagues there. And it was just disbelief,
and
really.
You stuck the golf on at the wedding.
No, we did not.
Did they get married before he hit the putt? The ceremony finished before, you know, they came down the aisle, they went through the whole thing. You're now man and wife, you're going to kiss the bride.
Yeah. Oh, he's missed the 8-footer.
He's hold it.
Yeah,
I mean, he didn't hold it though, did he?
No, it was disbelief. Having seen some of the, you know, you saw it trending and all this sort of stuff on Twitter, and then you think, okay, we'll see how bad this is. And then actually watching the video was quite extraordinary. And I think the thing that stood out for me was the body language of Tommy Fleetwood and Justin Thomas in the video. I think said it all. I mean, I think anyone, you know, the European Tour, obviously we know Tommy very well. Anyone who knows Tommy knows he's a very nice guy, very level-headed. I mean, you know, the body language looked awful. And Justin Thomas as well, who I think is friends with Bryson DeChambeau. Was it the Amiga Dubai Desert Classic at the start of the year where Bryson won? And he was fantastic. But I remember going out to watch a few holes.
There was a bit of controversy there as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, you know, when you're in Dubai and you're in the heat, and he was slow there, especially around the greens, I noticed it. And it needs to be addressed. However, I am
it's not true. He's saying it's complete and utter you-know-what.
No, he is slow, isn't he? You'd stop it easily.
Well, the rules are.
Forget the warnings. As soon as Andy McPhee turns out on a buggy, right, or whoever, turns out, that's your warning. That is your warning. You're on the clock. And I'll tell you what, if you start whacking penalty shots on them, it will stop really quick.
Do we think that's actually going to happen at some stage? Are we getting closer to it because the amount of high-profile slow play incidents and the amount he's talked about?
I mean, if you talk about the influence that social media can have, that video, which is recorded, I think, by somebody on their mobile phone, judging by that zoom in on Tommy Fleetwood, and the power that's had to then being shared so many times. And I think where the PGA Tour have now come out and said they're looking at it, they said that yesterday, is because of the backlash from the players. It's the players. And once, you know, Justin Thomas replied to a tweet with some sort of alarm clock emoji, you know, saying, and that's extraordinary. He's in the same group as him and he's getting involved. Luke Donald, Lee Westwood. I mean, if you go down the list on Twitter, the amount of players that saw this as an opportunity to maybe say, right, kind of, is enough enough? Is this the point where we... But the one thing I am a little bit uncomfortable with is that, you know, anyone who's around professional golf will know that it's not just Bryson DeChambeau.
No,
and it feels like, you know, you don't want to turn it into a witch hunt and just single
like
this one guy
it
out.
It feels like there are scapegoats. I mean, JB Holmes is another. And again, if he's on the TV with a high-profile player, then, you know, the focus can be on the lesser player in situations like this.
Yes, it can be. I was just listening to you chatting away there. I mean, I have one view on it, and that is that if you penalise with penalty shots, it won't happen again.
Moving on, unfortunately, Tiger Woods withdrawing from the event after a 4-over par 75 opening round, first competitive round since missing the cut at the Open. It's another back problem. I think he's going to try and play this week. I mean, what are you guys' thoughts on Tiger's situation at the minute? I mean, when he came back and won the Masters, I was sort of convinced he was going to play. Obviously not a full schedule, but for him, a number of events. But he didn't play in between the Masters and the PGA, did he? Or the PGA and the US Open. Is it just going to be, we're only going to see Tiger very, very limited times per
year?
I think so.
I think that's what will happen, yeah. I mean, you know, it was a fantastic bit of surgery that was done, not being a doctor myself, but it was a fantastic bit of surgery done to get him to even swing the club. So he's got to be careful, I would have thought, with what he does. His age, he's over 40. You know, he's the wrong side of 40.
If you're only playing 8-9 times a year, are you going to be ready for majors?
Well, I think he's that good that, you know, say the Masters, few weeks out, practice ahead of the Masters, how well does he know that golf course? You know, I think he still can win those events if he's not playing very often. I think his comments after the Open were a real sort of surprise. I think it felt to me like that was almost him, and he doesn't do it very often, admitting that, look, this is the way it's going to be, everyone. I think when he won the Masters, a lot of people got very carried away, and I think that's perfectly natural as golf fans, but I do think people got too carried away and, you know, coming over to the Open where it was cold, coming off a long flight and stuff like that. People have to realise that, you know, it's Tiger Woods, but a bad back, a dodgy back's a dodgy back.
Yeah.
I just think he's won the Masters. It's great to have him back. But, you know, the idea of him dominating is, I just can't see
kicking on like a gazelle. I don't think it'll happen. No, he might well win a few. He might win another major. You know, he might win more tournaments, but he's not going to do what he used to do in the past because he physically can't.
He is still in the top 10, though. Boxy.
He is. He's sixth. And before I get to him, I'll tell you that 10th is Justin Thomas. Patrick Cantlay has moved up from 10th to 9th. 8th is Bryson DeChambeau. Francesco Molinari is 7th. And the chap I was talking about, Tiger Woods, is 6th. John Rahm is 5th. 4th, Justin Rose, Rory McIlroy 3rd. Dustin Johnson 2nd. And funnily enough, Brooks Koepka leading the way.
And we can now speak to a player who is in ridiculous form at the moment, Callum Hill, who's just gone first, third, first on the Challenge Tour, including victory over the weekend in the Made in Denmark Challenge. Callum, would you be bold enough to call yourself the most in-form player in Europe right now?
No, I wouldn't probably go that far. I think I've just had a nice couple of weeks that have amounted to some good results.
But this has been an unbelievable summer for you. Did you think that you were going to win twice on the Challenge Tour? What were your goals at the start of the season?
Before you start a season, obviously, you're setting out as ambitious as possible. So I was aiming for the 3 wins to try and graduate to the European as quick as possible. But obviously, they're about as high a bar as you can set yourself. So it was a little unexpected to get 2 so closely within a few weeks, which has been really nice.
I know the reasons why you're not playing in the D&D this week, but could you explain it to the people listening? Because it's quite a thing to turn down.
My first win last year, which was obviously set up this year entirely, because I was just playing on invites and it was my first start on the Challenge Tour last year, was at Galgorm and this event last year. So it means quite a lot to me. So I'm quite looking forward to going back to where I kicked off my professional career throughout Europe.
And you're in a good spot. You know, you're second in the Challenge Tour rankings, but if you get one more win in, then you're exempt straight away straight into the tour, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. So it'd be great if I can continue the way I've been playing and have a good chance this week.
Callum, tell us a little bit about your background, because you went to college in the States, didn't you?
Yeah, I went to Western New Mexico University, a small Division II school in southwest New Mexico, for 6 years in total. I did a bachelor's for 4 years whilst playing, and then did a master's for 2 years and was the assistant coach to the golf team out there.
So what happens after that? What happens after college in America? Did you want to stay there? Was it your intention maybe to stay there? How does it work?
I really enjoyed my time out there. That's why I spent so long out there. So I was trying to get status on one of the tours, the Latin America or the Canadian tour, but I actually messed up the application process. I signed up for the Canadian qualifying school, I think 2 days after it opened, and found out that you had to sign up within the first hour because there's so many applications, and that I was like 180th reserve. That meant that actually made me available to qualify into the US Open, which I managed to do, which then gave me some invites to over this side of the pond and in Europe, which has worked out brilliant for me.
Callum, how much of a good training ground is the Challenge Tour in comparison, for example, the Players' School?
It is. It sets you up into the professional lifestyle, obviously travelling around Europe and further afield a few times. So you get used to the travelling, and then the competition is exactly, well, four rounds in that case is exactly the same. The competition is very competitive. The guys are extremely good. So I think it definitely builds you up to be ready for competing on the European Tour, whereas I think if you just came straight out of amateur rankings, obviously you've played a lot of amateur events which are at a very high level, most likely if you're getting straight through Q School, but that one you just have a little less experience, I'd say. So I think Challenge Tour is a great route, and I think the category you get from Challenge Tour obviously puts you in a nice position to have a full schedule the next year as well.
Callum, tell us a bit about your game. What's your strong points? What do you believe is you know, the way you play? Just tell us a little bit about your game.
Usually I'm quite a consistent ball striker. Usually I don't miss too many tee shots in places that make it difficult to find the green from. And then my iron play has been quite solid as of recent. And then my putting's pretty good. I'll give myself a good look at a lot of birdies if I hit plenty of greens.
26 in the Scottish Open this year. Did you see the difference in quality between playing a Challenge Tour event and a full European Tour event?
I think the depth just gets better, especially at the Scottish Open being a Rolex event, meaning that there's players from across the world playing, not just within Europe. The depth was quite impressive. I think when I finished my round on Sunday, I may have been some point at the top 10, and then by the end of the day, I was 26. So it just... But you could easily see it happening. There's a lot of very good players, and the scores are always going to be under par or considerably under par. So it's quite a very high level.
Callum, I think you'll do very well. But on a more important note, who's your football team?
I don't even pay attention, sorry.
Oh, stop it. I can't believe that.
He's been in America for 6 years, not interested. Who's your hockey team or your NFL side? That's the better question.
I've got nothing.
Concentrate on golf. That's what it's all about.
Yeah.
So your chances this week, what do you know about the event then?
If you make the cut, three of the rounds will be on the course that it was on last year, but the first two rounds, one of the rounds is on the Manacer, I think. One round in Galgorm, one round Manacer, two-round cut, and then the final two rounds on the Galgorm course again, and then I think the field is maybe 192 men, and I don't know exactly how many women there are, but I know there's a lot of women as well, so I think it'll be a very busy week with people and spectators and the volume of players as well.
Yeah, I think it's going to be well attended, and we wish you well. Many thanks for coming on the Race to Dubai podcast. Wish you well for the remainder of the season. Hopefully, we will see you on the main tour next year.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Thank you very much for having me.
Boxy, this is our chance to talk about a friend and colleague who unfortunately passed away recently, Gordon Brand Jr., the eight-time European Tour winner, who was in two successful Ryder Cup teams. We heard on last week's Race to Dubai show from a number of our regular guests, and if you haven't listened to that, please go back to listen to it, because we hear from the likes of Ian Wisdom, Paul Eales, Jamie Spence, and, of course, Robert Lee. Just from my point of view, and I've only known him a few years, and obviously he was a regular guest on the show, always made me feel very, very comfortable working with him. Always great to work with as well. He was a guy that you could throw anything at. He always had a story for you, and an absolute pleasure to work with when he was across the seat and sat where you are now. But obviously, Boxy, you knew him from an awful long way back.
I did, yeah. He was a bloke that always made you laugh. I always had a good laugh with him. He was very matter of fact. I knew Gordon from, I would say, 1979, so probably 40 years. I remember him, he was a very good amateur, and we sort of turned pro roughly around about the same time. And we did a bit of travelling together, and but, you know, I knew him. He was a gutsy player, really good gutsy player. But it was a massive shock, you know, dying at 60 years of age. I think it's one of those situations where our travelling circus, you know, the likes of Barry Lane, Roger Chapman, myself, there's a fair few others as well, you know, Jamie Spence, Robert Lee. He's the first one of our sort of circus of players to leave the planet, if you know what I mean. And I think that's why that's come as a bit of a shock. It'll happen. You know, it could be me next, could be whoever. You don't know who it'll be. But that's the way, unfortunately, life moves on. But Brandy was he was a really good bloke, a good laugh, great fun, real gutsy player, 8-time winner and 2 times in the Ryder Cup. And, yeah, and he'd be really badly missed. I was with him 2 weeks ago at the Open, or however long ago it was now. And we had a laugh outside the press centre and it, you know, and that was it. And I think the last time I saw him was, we were leaving the Open on the Sunday night. I was going to the Belfast Airport Hotel, and it was pouring with rain. And I remember coming out in the car and out of the taxi, and I saw Gordy coming the other way with his cap down, you know, walking in the rain, walking against the grain, as I say. The crowd are coming out. He's walking the other way. And I was gonna wind the window down and shout some obscenity or something at him out the window. I thought, no, I'll see him again. And I just left it, and I never did see him again. But, no, really badly, he'll be truly missed. He's a great bloke.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Well, that wraps up the show for today. Remember, you can stay up to date with all the latest news via europeantour.com and the official European Tour app, as well as Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Next time, we'll be bringing you a full review of the D&D Real Czech Masters, and we'll look ahead to the Scandinavian Invitation event as well. But for now, from Adrian Millerick. Adrian, great debut. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And from Mr. Richard Boxall. As always, Boxy, thanks for your time.
No problem. Goodbye.
And from me, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. We'll see you next week.